Is Michael your prince? Hello, this is Drago Stefanović from Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to Probe, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today, we are continuing our series of topics based on one of the most important books of the Bible, the Book of Daniel. To help us explore this book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion. Dr. Dave Thomas, Dean of School of Theology, and Kent Bramlett, a doctoral candidate at the University of Toronto, Canada, who specializes in archaeology. Welcome to both of you, and thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Many students of the Bible consider Daniel 11 to be one of the most difficult chapters in the Bible. The chapter is unusually long, full of details, its style is more literal than symbolic, the language is condensed, the pronouns are not used with precision, and so on. So a question may be raised here on what to do with the passages from the Bible that are too hard to understand and interpret.
We can have a lecture by you on this subject, Zdravko. Huh?
A good principle is the study of the Bible is to focus on the passages that are clear. In the approach to Daniel 11, in their approaches to Daniel 11, people usually take one of the following three positions. Some give up in despair any attempt to understand the content of the chapter and its message. Someone once said, "All I know about Daniel 11, I can say in 3 minutes and nothing more." On the opposite side are those who claim that they have been able to figure out every single detail found in the text. The same people often claim to have solutions to the rest of the problems found in the pages of the Bible. Many interpreters who belong to this group tend to be extremely literalistic in their explanation of prophecy, and in their zeal to leave no stone unturned, they find a great deal of information in the minutest detail in the text. I propose that in our study here, we take the middle road. A suggestion is given that although this chapter has been very challenging for interpreters, we can discern in it at least some connections that are linked with the other chapters from the book. And also, we can get some guidelines that will help define its basic message intended for the reader by its author. So I begin by asking the following questions of my colleagues. What are the things that are clear from this chapter, from Daniel chapter 11? Are there things that are clear?
Well, the constancy, I guess, of conflicts, you know, the North and the South, the powers between them. And I think that transcends into the larger issues of conflict between good and evil. Those are things that, at least to us, within our perspective, are constant.
And that is very true, because any good commentary on the book of Daniel that we open, we find these parallels between the visions in chapters 2, 7, 8, 9, and then 11. Therefore, you know, there is that constancy that is found. Mm-hmm. Is there more than that? Would you say that there is a progression also? Don't we find more details in this chapter? Don't we get an impression that the conflict is getting kind of longer as we approach it, maybe more intense?
Yeah, and I mean, the conflict seems to be played out by people on planet Earth more than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the end of the chapter, there's a certain vindication that's anticipated, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. I like that you use the term people, because the text talks here about kings, mm-hmm, and the armies. So what we find is specific mentioning of the human beings involved in that conflict. And
I don't want to rule out the possibility of cosmic conflict here either. But, you know, as you pointed out, the language in chapter 11 seems to be tied very much to the people of planet Earth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it is, on the other hand, related to the previous chapters that talked about the same conflict, can mm-hmm we say that mm-hmm way? Mm-hmm. Maybe this one focuses more on the very time of the end, the intensity, and how it's going to be prolonged.
What about Michael, Zdravko?
Let's get to Michael. That's one of the facts that we know. It comes from the text, even though there may be some difference in the historical identification of Michael.
Mm-hmm.
A very conservative position would take Michael as an Old Testament name for Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally see no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
The name Michael means who is like God. And it could well describe in the Old Testament a person as powerful as we would have in pre-incarnate Christ. What do you think? Do you have any opinion on this?
No, I asked the question.
Some scholars also relate the person of Michael to the person who looked like a human being in Daniel chapter 7,
mm-hmm.
and that one is related mm-hmm. to the title that was preferred title that Christ mm-hmm. used while on this earth.
But we don't have any very clear origins for this name.
In early Jewish commentaries, they assumed it was Michael the Archangel, one of the... Yeah. The major angels, and they had several of them named in mm-hmm. intertestamental period literature.
And a special protector or guardian angel of the people of Israel.
Yeah, and it was only then later Christian literature and thinking that this figure became identified with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the role of this figure that's important, mm-hmm. And we may recognize other people have different interpretations, but the role is one of principal protector.
Which is why why people identify Jesus with this name. Yeah.
And I like what I have just heard from Kent, that in general it is true in the book of Daniel. It is not the identification of powers that is in focus in the visions of Daniel. The historical part of Daniel, the stories, they deal more with that because we have real people. But in the prophetic part, it is more the activity, how a power acts, that is at the center mm-hmm. of what vision describes here. So just like in the case of the little horn and other anti-God powers that are found here, their identification is important, but is not the most important topic mm-hmm. in the visions. So it is true with the benevolent powers, the powers that are on the side of God, like Gabriel. We do not have an exhaustive description of who Gabriel was, his rank, his mm-hmm. credentials, or the same is true for Michael. But it's what they do mm-hmm. that matters here, mm-hmm.
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, to begin with, God himself. We do not find a very detailed description of God in the book of Daniel or in the Bible, but we know of God or about God through the way in which he acts. And that's an important principle to keep in mind when we interpret the Bible. As we proceed with the chapter, before we actually go into the contents of the chapter, let's say one more thing about Michael, and that is that Michael figures prominently in the beginning of this vision or this revelation and at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the Alpha and the Omega of mm-hmm. this revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be a good lesson there to learn that the conflict that exists should not confuse us so that we would turn our eyes away from what God is doing, but that God is still in control, and through either directly or through his messengers, he's at work. What do we do now with all the details that are found in this chapter? Basically, if we look at the schools of interpretation, the preterists, the historicists, the futurists, the idealists, and others, several of these schools, they focus on minute
individual pieces of,
identification of these details to history, whether past, in the case of the preterists, historicists throughout history, or the futurists at the time of the end. And there is a lot of truth that we can learn from these attempts. But aren't these details too overwhelming, too many? I've read commentaries from different schools, and most of them, they admit that the details are too many, and it's very difficult to relate every single one to history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the early part of the chapter is easiest to correlate with history. But then as it progresses, one tends to get lost in history and the details, and one searches for the overall message, I think, more successfully than the specific mm-hmm. details.
Then what would be the purpose of the details? I have a suggestion to make, and please react to it. You are welcome to disagree with me. But very often in the Bible, like in the book of Revelation, we have these details given to us probably in an impressionistic way to create an impression on us, probably to show that the conflict will be very long, very detailed. Almost everybody will be involved in the conflict because we have the literary figure of Merism here. In chapter 8, East and West are in conflict. In chapter 11, North and South are in conflict to show the totality of the earth being involved in this conflict. Mm-hmm. But the details, if they do not always correspond to history, may be here just to impress us how long the battle will be and detailed and maybe exhausting too, because we find Daniel himself exhausted mm-hmm. at the end of such revelations.
Yeah.
If we view it from the symbolic point of view, what can we say about the symbols of the north or the south? Does the Bible or the prophetic books of the Bible give any indication what they could represent, the power of the north or the power of the south?
From a historical or symbolic standpoint?
Probably symbolic.
Well, certainly we know that danger always comes from the north. For ancient Israel, the great empires entered Israel usually from the corridors to the north, and of course to the south lay Egypt historically. So you throughout the 1,000 years of kingdom of history in Israel, the powers of conflict usually clashed between the north and the south. So that would be a familiar theme, one that would resonate with the memories of the past.
The nation of Judah that was squeezed
between the north and the south, exactly, yeah. And again, then the symbology of the north and the south might lead one to images of cosmic conflict, good and evil, and where does Israel stand within this conflict?
Mm-hmm. And the best fortified gate, in the city of Jerusalem, even today, is the Damascus Gate.
The northern wall was breached from ancient times, the Crusaders.
What about the east and the west? It's more difficult.
Usually the east is a good orientation, isn't it?
That's what I think, yeah. Yes. It's a place of deliverance.
Yes. But when we put them all together, we say that we get a totality of the movements on the face of the earth throughout history, and especially this conflict that comes now toward the end and intensifies. Mm. It's interesting that starting with verse 21, we have the description of a contemptible person, which is another important parallel with the previous chapters. The power, the anti-God power that opposes God, and especially toward the time of the end, mm-hmm. is a persecuting power mm-hmm. throughout history.
In fact, persecution is a big thing in Daniel, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And the last verses in the chapter, they talk about the events that happen at the very time of the end, and some of them, they point to the future. Unfortunately, our time is up, and we may not have time to deal with the details of the end of the chapter. We could take it up again next week. Now, to summarize today's discussion, it is fair to say that there are passages in the Bible that are difficult. And whenever we study the Bible, we should begin with the passages that are less difficult. But in spite of that, we should not be discouraged, because there are other passages in the Bible that can throw light on these more difficult passages. We should let the Bible explain its symbols, and that should certainly be the case with Daniel chapter 11. I would like to thank both of you, Dave and Kent, for your contribution this week. I also would like to invite our listeners to join us next week as we continue exploring the book of Daniel. Thank you all for tuning in. For Probe, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.